Ribociclib does require this extra step of EKG monitoring and liver function test monitoring, which is a small aggravation for the medical team. If you do a different approach and you just line up the first line trial, so AI plus or minus CDK4/6 inhibitor, and we now have data for each of the drugs, palbo, ribo, and abema, and then in second line, fulvestrant plus minus palbo or plus minus abema, and you just tabulate the hazard ratios, again, they line up to within a hundredth of a decimal point for the hazard ratios. So I personally think that in terms of efficacy, these drugs are probably all interchangeable for breast cancer. Could there be some subtler differences that may emerge over time? Maybe. I mean, so in particular, abemaciclib has some CDK2, I think, and CDK9 or 7 inhibition. Whether that's clinically meaningful or not remains to be determined. And I know that there are people out there who think that, you know, abemaciclib might be a more potent drug, perhaps as a monotherapy, but that's not the way we typically give them. So whether that really matters in the clinic, I'm not sure, and I'm not actually convinced. You know, when the aromatase inhibitors first came out, there was a lot of stuff about how the different aromatase inhibitors had slightly different side effect profiles and had different degrees of aromatase inhibition and estrogen suppression and might be preferential. And when they finally did massive studies comparing each of the AIs against each other, they were absolutely identical products. And wouldn't surprise me if that was the story here.
Although, you know, I've heard people say that, I guess, based on laboratory data more than anything else, that there maybe really could be an advantage to continuous dosing with the abema. Also, that maybe is easier for the patient in terms of compliance. You brought up the issue in terms of side effects, though. What about CNS activity?
So there has been reports that abemaciclib may have CNS activity, that it may be able to penetrate better into the CNS. For most women who are getting this as combination with endocrine therapy in the first or second line of treatment, CNS metastasis is very rare. And to date, there are no numbers from the randomized trials to suggest different incidence of brain metastases in patients, though maybe that's something that could emerge in longer follow-up. I think the good news is it's a whole new class of drugs for breast cancer patients. The good news is they clearly make endocrine therapies work more successfully. I think that for the moment, the drugs can be used almost interchangeably. The big question in my mind really is, should we continue CDK4/6 inhibition beyond progression? So in the management of HER2-positive metastatic breast cancer, we continue to keep our foot on the brake of the HER2-driven cell proliferation. Is there a role for ongoing CDK4/6 inhibition beyond initial progression? We are leading a study called PACE, P-A-C-E, which is for patients who've had endocrine therapy plus a CDK4/6 inhibitor, progress, and then are randomized to second-line endocrine therapy with or without a CDK4/6 inhibitor. And I think that's a very interesting question, which has real practice management implications if it's found that ongoing anti-CDK4/6 inhibition is clinically valuable. So we're hoping that that study will accrue and answer the question.
Also, financial implications. What do we know about the differences in these three drugs? Have they been looked at, for example, in a neoadjuvant setting?
I don't think they've been compared, but there are emerging data that these drugs have activity in the neoadjuvant setting. That's not a big surprise. They are drugs that inhibit cell cycle proliferation. So if you look at an early biomarker like Ki-67 and you say, what is it at baseline? And then what does it look like 2 or 4 weeks later? You see dramatic or remarkable decreases in proliferative measures like Ki-67. You know, what isn't really known is whether that changes the outcome in neoadjuvant management. Remember, these are drugs that had a median time of treatment in first-line endocrine therapy of 24 to 26 months. And so I don't know that exposing a patient to them for 10 weeks in the neoadjuvant setting really tells us much about their true value.